Folks, welcome to the Generations Broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson with you, Executive Director for Christian Home Educators of Colorado, but also a pastor and a father of five, trying to renew relationships and truth in a lost and lonely world. And we're doing it through the incarnation of homeschooling, reestablishing family relationships in a radical sense, bringing our children back into our homes full-time, and working with them, reintegrating, becoming their educators, their disciplers. Providing their own paideia, their discipleship, their education, their preparation for life. You know, parents getting involved in their children's lives. It's a radical concept. And, you know, a lot of us first-generation homeschoolers, when we start incorporating these ideas, home discipleship, and when we start jettisoning birth control and saying, hey, we're going to go with a single-income family here, and by the time you got the fifth child, the sixth child, the seventh child, whatever, it can be rather stressful for the home, especially if you have never been raised in this world and life view. If this social system has foreign to your own consciousness, then you're not going to be used to this. And it's going to be a major stress calling for incredible amounts of faith in God if you're going to survive in this sort of lifestyle. These can be some of the toughest times of a mother's life. And I want to talk about stressed out moms on today's Generations Broadcast. You know, and what makes it hard, again, is that these are first-generation Christians or first-generation homeschoolers or first-generation having a lot of kids or what have you. And a lot of times, the young men and young women were never raised in families that had a lot of kids. They weren't raised in families that were Christian, or they weren't raised in families where homeschooling and home discipleship was really happening. So this is all new to them, and that's what makes it very, very challenging. Never really been trained in the lifestyle of mothering, managing, allowing the house to be a little messy around the edges. And they're certainly in the process of learning those hard character traits of contentment and joy and trial and patience and love and joy. And they have few role models in their lives. Sometimes the churches are filled with dinks, double income, no kids, yuppies, living their convenient quality of life, materialistic lifestyles. So they're not going to be all that helpful for these poor moms. These poor moms are learning a little bit about what Paul meant when he said, "She shall be saved by childbearing." The sanctification process is the kneading machine of God's love, and that's really hard. Well, I want to bring my own wife into this segment of Generations because, you know, somehow she survived. She's sitting right here. So she's got a pulse, and that's good. Sweet, welcome to Generations.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi. Hi. Hi, sweetheart.
Hi there.
Now, our children are 8 to 17 years of age. And in some sense, we're kind of over the hump, aren't we, hon? I mean, we've gone over some of those most difficult years, and those were challenging years for us. We're seeing other mothers going through these years right now, and yet somehow you made it through.
Yeah, by God's grace.
Yeah, yeah. You weren't really all that prepared for it either. How'd you do it?
Well, like I said, by God's grace.
Yeah.
And I know I didn't do a very good job at the beginning.
Well, nobody does a good job at the beginning. It takes 20 years to build that house, and at the beginning it's pretty rough, isn't it?
Yeah, in fact, I feel like I'm still on the learning curve.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So how did you make it? I mean, year after year, through those twos, threes, fours, fives, sixes, sevens, how do you make it through those years?
Well, I'll have to admit that at the very beginning, it was very, very difficult.
Yeah.
Like you said, I didn't have any role models. I didn't have the training. I was college educated. And that wasn't something that they spoke about in college classrooms, how to raise your children. In fact, it seemed like children were more of a nuisance than a blessing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you get any encouragement through those years? And you can include me in this.
Well, of course, I did want to have children,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't realize how difficult it was.
Yeah.
It seemed as though my expectations were that children were easy.
Yeah.
And I oftentimes was critical of other people who had children. I thought, well, if they just do A, B, C, D, they can, you know, raise their children correctly. And I thought that that's what I would do.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I had children, I found that they're a lot more complicated.
There's no easy recipe.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And even reading books on child raising, a lot of times they're really helpful, but sometimes they can give you specifics that might not quite work with your family.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes a lot of wisdom, a lot of prayer, a And I think over the years, that's what I've learned has helped me the most.
Now, when we started out, I wasn't as involved. I just wasn't. I was busy. I was working. I ran for governor of Colorado. And at some point, I got more involved, didn't I? I mean, at some point, I got engaged in the process. And what did I do that was helpful, do you think?
Well, I think you stopped working in the corporate world, and you came home, and you started seeing exactly what I was dealing with at home, because I could tell you all day long, but until you actually saw and experienced the difficulties that I had, then you finally could see how you could help me in a more tangible way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But before then, I don't think you really knew what I was dealing with, and I don't think a lot of husbands necessarily do. Until you actually walk in someone's shoes, you don't really know what they're going through.
So it would be good for a father, say, to take the children for a day or two or three or four and just live your life, walk in your shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Homeschool those children. Discipline those children. Work with them. See the attitude issues that are coming out and really get to know the children.
Exactly. I think that's very important.
Mm-hmm. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about how dads can get more involved and how homeschool families survive those early years, the stressful years. More on Generations in just a moment. Stay with me.
Folks, with this radio program, we're bringing relationships and truth back to a lost and lonely world. That's why we advocate homeschooling, mentorship, family-based economics, and a biblical worldview, all as part of our homeschool ministry based in Colorado. For homeschooling seminars, curriculum, and encouragement, visit our website at chec.org. That's check.org on the web. For apprenticeship, mentorship, and entrepreneurship training for your children and your family, you need to hook up with our AME program at ameprogram.com. That's ameprogram.com. You know, the Generations Radio Program is a ministry of Generations with Vision.
Welcome back to the Generations Radio Broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson, a father of five, a husband of one. So's Dave. And Dave and I are going to talk now for a little bit about the importance of a father's involvement in the homeschool in those early years. And, you know, Dave, it can be pretty stressful for mom or wives as they work with these children during those early years. And we certainly see a number of these young ladies really stressing out, having a hard time through those years that there's very little delegation. The children are fairly young. They're not able to change the little one's diapers. They're not able to assist in the homeschooling. And yet these mothers have embraced these responsibilities to the umpteenth degree. So, you know, at some point, dads need to get engaged. And we need to, hopefully with wisdom and love and care, mediate certain situations and certainly get more involved in the household situation. One of the things that we've done is try to make it as simple as we can so that the kind of responsibilities that mom is dealing with are the most necessary responsibilities, and we're not overburdening the home with lots and lots of other extraneous details and responsibilities. Sometimes church involvement, church programs, church leadership can be a huge imposition upon the family. And you know, maybe when those couples are young, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34 years of age, they probably should back away from some of those extraneous responsibilities and really focus on their families, because these are the developmental years of those kids.
Well, these are the years that the kids absolutely demand attention. You can't, you know, it's not a choice. When a three-year-old says, I need a bottle of milk, they're going to insist and insist and insist until you give them the bottle of milk. You can read all the stuff you want about how to train your child, but at 3 years old, you're at the very beginning steps. I think one of the problems that many homeschool mothers have is perceived expectations. One is they've perceived a lot of expectations of themselves that maybe aren't realistic, that their husband should be able to come home from work, the house will be immaculate, Dinner will be ready. The children will be well behaved, and they'll be smarter than all the other children because, of course, they're homeschooled. And mom puts these expectations on herself, but they're not really real. Now, the father, the husband, may not be very good at communicating what he wants his wife to really do. It may not be important to him that the house is immaculate. He may care a lot more that his children are learning, or maybe he doesn't. Those expectations haven't been communicated, and so the wife takes these expectations that she perceives that are there, and now she thinks she needs to be superwoman.
And she's been taught, perhaps, by other women who have it together, so, you know, quote-unquote, but have made the distance. They've been homeschooling for 20 years. They're supposed to be the great examples who have raised these wonderful children that have sterling character, and of course they still have their flaws, but it appears like a house is well put together. Here's the problem, though, Dave. Those perceived expectations are just a product of something that... Here's the problem, Dave. The problem is it takes 20 years to build a home. All right. Let's say you start out, you know that it's going to take you 20 years to build a home. Now, the neighbor next door has a home that took 20 years to build, and, you know, all 18,000 square feet of it looks pretty good. But here you are starting out, and you've got a foundation partially laid. You know, there's dirt all over the place. You don't have any walls up yet. You might have a few structured portions of the home, but it's just not well put together. It's a mess. You've got a lot of discipline that's got to happen. It's going to take you 20 years to build this house. It's a process. It's not going to happen overnight. And, Dave, I think part of these perceived expectations that are unrealistic really arise from the idea that you can have a really wonderful little home that's nicely put together inside of 5, 6, 7, 8 years. It's going to take longer than that.
Yeah, and I think those perceived expectations express themselves in public behavior of our children. We want our children to make us proud. I mean, we really do. After all, the people next to us in church, their children are perfect. They're sinless. And we look down the row at our own children, we see that, well, they're a little unkempt, the hair's not done, they're not paying attention during the sermon, they're not being as honorable as we'd like. And who bears the weight of that, of those children's sin? Well, mom thinks, oh, I'm failing. I'm failing my kids, my little sinners. They're letting everybody know they're little sinners, and now my husband won't be respected at the gates because of my children. And they bear this weight, and it becomes a big source of stress, these perceived expectations. Meanwhile, they don't know that the family with the perfect little children are just as panicked.
Yeah.
They're just as panicked because maybe at any moment their children will really show what they're like.
Yeah. And there's a lot of pride there, too. There's a lot of pride there, too. And the other thing, Dave, is that the people closest to you are the hardest to love because the people closest to you are close enough to you where you can see their sins, their flaws, their blemishes. And because you're just that close, you're within an inch of that face, you can see all the blemishes. They're not as pretty as you come that close to them as they were when you were 6 feet away from them. And the other thing is you just got to tell these young folks that, yeah, you've got character issues in those children's lives that you're going to have to work on for the next 15, 18, maybe 20 years. And it's going to take some time here. You know, the Bible talks about teaching your children diligently as you sit in the house, as you walk by the way, as you rise up, as you lie down. That word diligently is shenantam. And the word shenantam is the word used for polishing a sword where, you know, again and again, you're sharpening that sword. But it takes many, many, many strokes before you have that thing to a fine edge. And that takes a long time. That's a process. That's not something that's going to happen overnight.
And, Kevin, a very important third source of stress is that the woman then, the mother, the wife, spend so much time and so much effort on those children. She's with them all day long. She's cleaning bottoms. She's making lunch. She's cleaning the table up after their mess. Constantly, constantly working with them, homeschooling them. Before long, the relationship with her husband, the one that she's supposed to be united with, begins to suffer. She no longer has the effort. She no longer looks as pretty for him. And she begins to worry that her value in his eyes is dropping. And you talk about a stress level going up. When the one become two, instead of the two becoming one, stress is inevitable.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why the relationship between the husband and the wife is critical. And hence, I want to get to this point, Dave. We have got to be loving our wives. We have got to be congratulating them. We need to be encouraging them along the way. And we need to make sure that we are taking as much of the pressure off of them as is necessary. We've got to be maybe doing the dishes. We maybe need to clean the toilets for them. We maybe ought to give them a little quiet time. There's a point at which I realized my wife wasn't getting a good half hour to an hour of time by herself in the Word and in some of the books that she wanted to be reading. And so I gave her that hour in the morning or in the evening, and she was doing her own thing while I cleaned up, while I did the work, while I worked with the children to clean up the house. And so as husbands, I think it's vitally important for us to do that. What's increased the stress upon our wives is the fact that the husbands have left the home. And they remember, they didn't, for the most part, leave the home very much when the world was honoring it. Remember that the husbands were not apart from the home all that much when it was an agrarian economy. When we were farmer boy plowing next to Pa in the 1870s and the 1880s, the last 100 years have increased the stress upon the family. And if homeschool families are trying to revive the concept of family, which means reintegrate, work together, educate together, then that dad's got to find some way in which he can support his wife in this venture. She just can't do this alone. And I know that produces some stress for those fathers as well, because we've got an entire economic and educational system that is against us. And to try to reverse these systemic problems is practically impossible for little old me and little old you. And yet, you know, by God's grace and by faith and by the wisdom that comes from above, I think we can find ways to do that, Dave.
And Kevin, that's why it is so vitally important, absolutely critical, that there be a lot of cherishing happening within the marriage. Paul says that we are to love our wives as we love our own bodies. Now think about this. If you were out, say, cutting wood, and you noticed that your left arm was doing most of the swinging of the axe head, and that left arm was really starting to ache and get tired, you would probably switch your grip in order to put some more stress on the right arm.
And understand that the kind of stress we're talking about is not the kind of stress that a lot of guys face in the workforce. It's the kind of stress that's involved in relationships and in discipline and these sorts of things. So when I would come home, I would sign up for all the discipline. So if there was to be any discipline at all after 5 p.m., after Dad came home, it was all Dad, 100% Dad. Because she had been dealing with it all day. And discipline is very wearing on you emotionally and physically and in every way. And so when we had disciplined children and Dad was at home on Saturdays, Sundays, and the evenings, what have you, I would be doing the discipline and I would be bringing the children into the room. And you know what? That did a lot too for our children, because they realized that it wasn't just Mom that was interested in the character forming of these kids. It wasn't just the mom that loved these children enough to chastise them. This father, was loving these children as well. And his heart was wrapped around those kids and loved them so, so very much that he wanted to correct them and to lead them to the cross of Christ as well, for that forgiveness that only comes through the blood of Christ when they sin against him.
If you cherish your wife like you cherish your own body and your left arm gets sick, you don't go to the store and start saying, oh, it'd be nice to get a new left arm. Maybe that prosthetic device would be good or that one would be good. No, you do what you need to in order to make the whole organism, the whole body well. And this is how it is with the marriage. When our wife is ill, when she is feeling down, the whole body suffers. We need to cherish her. One of the most important ways, and I think one of the most neglected in most marriages, is this idea of being a cheerleader for each other. You know, when a husband goes to work, there's not many people telling him great job. There's a lot of people criticizing him. He wants to come home and he wants to know that his work is appreciated by his wife. He wants her to be a cheerleader. But she needs that every bit as much to say, you're doing a great job with the children. This meal is delicious. I don't know how you found time to do it. I didn't know that these elements actually would go together and taste good. But you've done a great job. You are doing such a wonderful job in the family. She needs a cheerleader. She needs that energy to know that she is pleasing her husband and she's doing a good job. Every bit as much as the husband needs to hear from her that she appreciates him.
And she needs an adult to talk to. You know, that was the other thing. My wife was with little tiny tykes all day long, and when I came home, she wanted to talk to an adult, and she wanted to relate to me, and of course, you know, that takes a little extra effort for some guys. I'm not super communicative outside of a professional environment like this. Usually I'm a pretty quiet, thoughtful person sitting around thinking all day long. It's the way I was when I was a child. I'm still that way. So it took a little more effort for me to communicate with my wife and learn how to encourage her with thoughtful conversations and thoughtful, edifying encouragements and exhortations. And Dave, let's also not minimize the vital importance of faith. I think we should bring this up before the end of the program, because these women are really being tested in terms of their faith. The Bible says that women are saved by childbearing, and I believe that has to do with the faith that is associated with the sanctification process in childbearing. It takes a lot of faith to have a child. It takes a lot of faith to raise children. It takes a lot of faith to do the kinds of things that our ladies are called to do. I mean, I know the professionals say, once you get that kid out of the womb, process that child into the arms of professionals, let the professionals raise them, and so forth. That's the Platonic worldview. But that's not our worldview. Our worldview is, as moms and dads, with all of our faults, and with all of our challenges, with all of our stresses, and with all of our emotional challenges, we still are called by God to be the mothers and the fathers, and to engage some of the toughest work that people will ever, ever, ever do in the history of the world, and that is to raise a child. And Dave, it takes so much faith to do that. And I know a lot of our ladies are sometimes afflicted with faithlessness and fearfulness. And man, we've got to do everything we can to buttress their faith, to encourage them not to fear the future, but to trust in God and continue working with these children for the glory of God.
And Kevin, that means trusting in God and His methods. Sometimes a woman will get very stressed out because her child isn't learning something, and they'll quickly abandon God's methods of discipline or of teaching, and they'll go to the worldly wise man and try and get his method. It means that they have to have faith in God's methods of their husband is their head. And he might not be the perfect head, and maybe he's even losing his job, but they have to have faith that God gave them a husband and it was a good thing, and he will provide, and his leadership is the best leadership that he can give right now, and that their children, you know, given 18 years of a godly education, will grow up and worship God all the days of their life. That takes tremendous faith because, well, we know each other's sins and we know our own sins. And sometimes we just are not content to ride the rapids of life when we think there's a better way.
And we're not saying that we love our wives only when they're lovable. And we're not saying that wives should respect and trust their husbands even when they are trustworthy and respectable. They might not be all that respectable. They may have just lost their job and maybe foreclosing on the home and things are going badly. Well, yeah, he may not be respectable, but now's a really good time to respect him. And if that woman respects her husband when he's not all that respectable, Dave, some tremendous things can happen in the life of that man and that woman.
It's one thing's for certain. If she doesn't honor her husband, good things are not going to happen out of that dishonor.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, folks, this is what it's going to take to make it through those years. We're not saying it's easy. We're saying it's going to take a lot of faith. You got to be trusting in God. You got to be bringing these things to God in prayer, and certainly not neglecting the importance of family worship. And you can call it different things: couples praying together, families getting together on their knees and praying to God for His assistance, and opening the Word of God and encouraging each other in the Word. Certainly, reading the Psalms can be very encouraging, very faith-boosting during these times of conflicts and trials and difficulties. And I would recommend memorizing the Psalms as families as you're working through some of the most difficult years. Finally, Dave, I'd really like to encourage folks in the area of just making it through persevering. Perseverance is so very, very important. I just feel like as a guy who's made it through some of those very tough years, in those early years as we established our family, looking back, I can see God has blessed us so much. But sometimes when you're going through those years, you just don't quite see the blessing at the end of the tunnel. You're not seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. Or if it is a light, you're thinking it's a train moving your direction. No, you gotta know, folks, that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Do not be weary in well-doing, for in due season you will reap if you faint not. And of course, Dave, I heard that probably 100 times from people who had gone before us saying, hey, just hang in there, hang in there, hang in there. If you keep working with your children like this, these children are going to rise up and call you blessed. And you just keep doing this work. And then one day those children will be able to take a lot of the work that you're doing and continue to do that in the home. And you can do so much more delegation when your children hit the teenage years, and your relationships with your children are going to be rock solid and so forth. Just put that investment in on the front end and trust in God the entire distance, And God is good. God is good. He'll reward your efforts.
And we like to say that children are handcrafted and not factory made. And handcrafting takes a lot of time, and it takes a lot more work, and it takes a lot of attention to detail. And it, the whole process is a difficult process. I mean, some women are stressing out about having a three-year-old until they find out that when their boys turn 13, there's a whole different set of stresses that are involved. And yet, God uses all those to sanctify you and to build the character of your children. And really, at this point, you're building the character of your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren at the same time. And you got to have that. You got to see with eyes of faith that this is working. This is God's plan. This is how we do it. And yes, it's hard.
Anything of value, my friends, is going to take 20 years of hard work and steadfast faith if it's going to be worthwhile in the end. And that's what raising children is all about. Yes, it will take some hard work and some steadfast faith. But over 20 years, you're going to see tremendous blessing as God blesses all that work and that faith. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Generations Radio broadcast. I hope this has been helpful for you. You can interact with the radio program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. And you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world, at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we cast a vision for the next generation.